for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 679 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week it's the return of Benjamin Morse from We Are Scarlet Twilight Cobalt Crisis Part 1, and he has a request for all of us. One of our favorites here at the podcast, Ben Morse, discusses his new upcoming crowdfunding project after his recent success with We Are Scarlet Twilight. As always, Ben writes, pencils, inks, and colors the entire series. This time he's got a Kickstarter crowdfunding project coming very soon, and he needs our help to make it the success it needs to be. Here's its current description. An epic combining the scope of classic Big Two events with the style and atmosphere of comics' golden age. It'll be an 8-part epic on a titanic scale, so as many of us as possible need to sign up to help get the word out and be notified when it launches. We talk about how the Scarlet Twilight franchise is progressing, where Ben is at in the development of his excellent storytelling, and what we can expect from him in the months ahead. Ben is counting on all of us fans to make this happen, so be sure to go to the link included with the episode description so you can sign up today. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Ben has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. The end is here, an epic combining the scope of classic Big Two events with the style and atmosphere of comics' golden age. It's We Are Scarlet Twilight Cobalt Crisis Part 1. And I'm talking with the creator who we've had the pleasure of speaking with before. That's Benjamin Morse. How you doing, Ben?
Doing great, Wayne. Thanks for having me back.
It's good to talk with you. I love the We Are Scarlet Twilight. That whole series just really got me. Now, just in case somebody might not be familiar with We Are Scarlet Twilight, do you want to talk about what happens in the first series of that?
Absolutely. Thanks. It's a fusion of Golden Age comics and sort of pulp adventure stuff with some of the more modern takes we're used to. It's the story of a kind of classic two-fisted American crime buster named Captain Lancet, who has a few dark secrets. And he accidentally, while hunting down this this sort of vampire cult that's menacing New York in the 1930s, makes a little bit of an error and ends up allowing these villains to take over the world before he falls into a coma for 100 years. He wakes up in the distant future. His enemies have taken over the earth, and he kind of wakes up and figures out a way to sort of bring back humanity and freedom and all that. Without giving away too much, he sort of uses some of the things that went wrong in 1930 to fix the problem that got caused in the future. So this next chapter will be starting out, you know, after he kind of put everything right and is just trying to rebuild the world and things like that, but finds that there's some other problems that still haven't quite been dealt with that he needs to handle. And this new story is going to kind of take that and really expand the scope. And it's essentially a take on Crisis on Infinite Earths or Secret Wars, but as if it had been done in the 1930s or 40s in the Golden Age of comics.
Wow. Okay. Because one of the things about We Are Scarlet Twilight is there are lots of wonderful shocks and surprises as we go along. And I in no way want to spoil any of that because I want the people to get that same experience if they haven't read it yet. So we're going to avoid spoilers is what we're going to do with that. So it's just such a great thing. Now, what we're doing right now is we are gaining followers for your upcoming it's We Are Scarlet Twilight, as I said, Cobalt Crisis Part 1. We're getting followers for you for that before the campaign actually begins. And you were telling me that the actual campaign itself is going to start in late February?
Yeah, late February, early March. It depends on right now the books. So I ran a campaign late last year called Countdown to Cobalt Crisis, and that's kind of an homage to both Golden Age comics and some of the great lead-in books to the big crossovers like Countdown to Infinite Crisis, which is, you know, the early 2000s, which I really enjoyed. And it's basically a continuation, kind of setting up this new status quo for Captain Lancet, introducing a few new characters, kind of fleshing out the world a little bit as a lead-in to Cobalt Crisis 1. So it's kind of just a setup lead-in issue, and that one's coming back from the printers. It's actually already printed. They're sending it to me this week, and I'm going to be fulfilling throughout the month. Once I have issue one done and all the books out to backers of the previous campaign, that's when we'll be off to the races with the new campaign.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, the interesting thing is this book that it's issue number zero is what it says on it. And I've got it up in front of me, which you made available to me so I can take a glance at it. There's some really interesting other characters or other heroes around during the time of when this all takes place. Some of them are really entertaining to me. I like the one Ace Falcon is the first one. He's got quote marks around Ace. Scourge of the Vampire West, it says. Do you want to talk about that character? Because I think if we talk too much about Captain Lancet, I think we're gonna spoil some stuff, and I don't want to do that. But this other stuff, I think we can probably touch on without spoiling too much. So, who is Ace Falcon?
So he's kind of a without spoiling too much, one of the things I really love about Crisis on Infinite Earths and, Secret Wars and stuff is you get different versions of heroes mixing, you get heroes from different universes combining. And I wanted a way to do that in my upcoming story. And one of the ways I was thinking about, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, is there are some great classic public domain heroes out there that you can kind of use. I really wanted to use Captain Midnight or Spy Smasher, who I had hoped were public domain but weren't. And yet I really love the imagery of those characters. I love the flight setup that Captain Midnight has. I love the look of both of them. So I kind of wanted to create a character that picked up on all my favorite things about those two guys. And that was Ace Falcon. So his setup is basically in the original Scarlet Twilight between issue one and two, over a century passes, Captain Lancet's in coma and the bad guys are running Earth. They're vampires. They're oppressing humanity and kind of using them to feed on. And you just get, as you would, little pockets of resistance here or there. And Ace Falcon is a Lakota out west who kind of resists. He goes up to the mountains and, you know, at the time, Indians living or Native Americans living out west had really had a rough time, been treated horribly by the government, and were probably pretty experienced at just going up in the hills and waiting things out. So they did very well comparatively during this century of vampire domination in my sort of canon. Ace Falcon is a guy who's great. He's the best pilot on Earth. He's kind of an Indiana Jones type character who is out there fighting vampires and doing what he can where he can. With just his human ingenuity and skills. So that story is a quick eight pager, kind of just sets up the character and kind of his world. He's kind of got some of the imagery touchstones of the Lone Ranger and Indiana Jones, aside, you know, also with the visuals of, you know, Captain Midnight and Spy Smasher, who I mentioned earlier. And the plot of that one is there's a train, a vampire train going out west to ferry humans that they have in captivity back east to be fed on by the vampires, the bad guys. And he wants to get that train and stop it before it can pick up those people and take them to their demise. So that's kind of the plot of that eight pager. And it's kind of a fun Western Indiana Jones style superhero adventure. And I really tried, you know, this is an audio show, but if you do guys get to see the pages eventually, or if you go to any of my socials, you can probably find them. I really tried to make it look like kind of an Alex Toth style. I wanted a little rougher look to it, a little sketchier that I thought kind of fit the Western atmosphere of this one.
Now, before we get too far into this, we should talk about what you actually do in these books. If I remember correctly, you do pretty much everything, right? You write and do the art as well?
Oh, yeah. It's real simple. I do everything you see. I do the writing, the artwork, the coloring, the lettering. I do the design. I send it to the press. And then for this campaign, the one we're talking about, once the books get here, I'll package them up and send them out too. So, yeah, I do everything but print them up, I suppose.
So you're a storyteller, basically.
I suppose I am, yeah.
And that's what a lot of people who do those kinds of things, they like the word storyteller. So I kind of figured that might help with your things here because it's and we've talked before about the fact that this gives you a certain amount of freedom You know, when you go back over stuff and you're getting ready to send to the press, and all of a sudden you go, whoops, I meant to do this and that and the other in there. You can do some changing to the dialogue or to the art. So this really does a real service for you. It helps you do the best storytelling you can, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's something that is a real benefit to readers. As you, when you get something from a guy who's just doing it all himself, there are things, to be honest, that I saw in just for a quick, for instance, is in that Ace Falcon story I had. I'm a big Indiana Jones fan and a big Spielberg fan. There was a sequence I had where he was kind of, you know, he's in a fight. There were some complicated things going on. He had to get to one thing so he could do another thing. And that really works in a movie. And it's kind of, I was kind of thinking of some Indiana Jones fight scenes that I really liked. And I wanted to do a comic version of that. And as I got into it, I kind of said, you know, that's going to require me to show, to kind of go back from this panel to this panel to this panel like five times, even on one page. That's going to be a little boring. It just doesn't quite work in comic book language as well as it could. And it would have worked. I think it would have been clear and okay. But I said, that's just a lot of real estate to take up for this bit where I could have a cool picture on the other page. It could be a little bigger, bolder, more colorful. And I think that's more of that's what shines in comic books, and that's kind of what you should concentrate on. Had I been the writer and handed off to another artist or even, you know, a letterer, I would probably have hesitated to make that change late in the game. And that, I think, would have been a disservice to the book, but I wouldn't have ever wanted to put another creator in a spot where they need to go and redo something, you know, that they've already done. That's not really respectful to your team when you're collaborating with people. The nice thing about just being the team is I can make myself do that. And I'm not like, I would certainly, I don't know, I'd say I'd never ask for something to be changed if it really needed to be, but I would really think long and hard about doing it because you need to respect people's time. And this is, you know, comic and comic art especially is really tough to do. And you know, you need to be cognizant of that. So I probably would have hesitated, but because it's just me, I can say, oh, you know, that's not working. Let's retool this. I can show more of this other cool thing on the next page that just really does look better than the complicated thing I was trying to do over here. So I think that's something you get with a writer artist, especially one that's doing everything coloring. You know, you've got the flexibility to say, hey, this isn't working now that I have it on the page. Let's think about this. Let's do it a little differently.
Mm-hmm. Now, this next story you go to is a little different, where the first one was largely you doing the art and that portraying your own storytelling. The next one is the Red Roadster Races Doom. And the interesting thing about this one is you vary it up. Instead of there's a piece of art or a banner of art across the top of a two-page spread, and there's text underneath. So we get to read the text this time and kind of fill in the blanks ourselves with the image you got on the top, which is really great.
Oh, thanks. It was really fun. And that's something that comes straight from the Golden Age comics. If you go back and read those, you generally would get three or four. You get a maybe 8, 9, 10 page story of the main hero, the guy that was on the cover. And then you'd get some 4 to 5 page backups with different heroes, maybe a humor story. And then you have one or two prose stories that usually had just one or two illustrations. So I really wanted to do that. I thought, oh, that's a cool thing that you get in those old books that really will put you when you're reading it in that era. If you're familiar with those, you'd be like, oh yeah, I remember those. And it, you know, I don't want the book to look like it's from the 1940s and just found it. I want it to be clear. It's, you know, something that's been made now and it has the modern artwork that we're used to, or that, you know, that level of detail and everything. But whenever I can do something that harkens back to that era of comics, I'm going to throw it in and do it. So that's just something I wanted to, when I was going through and doing my research and really, trying to find things that were in those comics that you don't necessarily see anymore. That was one of the top of list things that I wanted to do. And it got me to, gave me a chance to stretch my prose writing muscles out after, I don't even know how long a hiatus. So it was fun to do.
Now there's one thing at the very end of the story of the text, there's a little ad there, Second Avenue Egg Cream. It says, did you make that ad?
I did. It's made up. I don't know if you remember in the original Scarlet Twilight, it's kind of a running reference. I'll just say it's Captain, without spoiling too much. It's Captain Restaurant or Captain Lancet's favorite establishment in New York City. Mm. So that's something we've been referring to. I was putting ads for it, fake ads, and I think even as far back as the first Scarlet Twilight, and just popping them in there, mostly just to give you the atmosphere of a Golden Age comic, because you'd see those things here and there. But then it also does become a little part of the story. If you read carefully, he mentions a place, I think in issue 3, that solves a certain problem for him. And in issue 4, he's walking through the ruins of Manhattan and he finds out what's happened to his old favorite restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Second Avenue Egg Cream.
Great, great. Now the next story is a little bit of a thing. And I swear this looks like Frank Miller type, Dark Knight type art. It's Captain Lancet of Earth Delta 86. And
Yeah, that one. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Wow, this is the color and the and the movements that the Captain Lancet makes and all kinds of stuff. It's Frank Miller would be proud to read this one because it just feels like Dark Knight Returns all over it. So it's really great.
Yeah, that one was a blast to do. It was an idea I've had for a while. I really love Dark Knight Returns. I love that era of Batman. So there's always that stuff bouncing around in my head. And I wanted to, like I said, this upcoming book is a real homage to Crisis on Infinite Earths and Secret Wars. And one of my favorite things in there is you've got when in the original Crisis, I know, like, say, Superman and had met his counterpart on Earth 2, or he had met Captain Marvel or Uncle Sam from their respective Earths. But they really did that in the Crisis in a way that was like, they knew each other, but they knew they were from very different places. So I wanted to just establish that there was a multiverse, that there were other ideas about Captain Lancet out there. And I do mention in the intro to that story in the text box that it's something that we don't really have a use for since there's Captain Lancet on our Earth. But I wouldn't be shocked if this guy does come into play at some point in the future. That's all I'll say about it.
Okay. I really love the art in there. It's just terrific the way that looks.
Oh, thanks.
That series, The Dark Knight Returns, just changed everything as far as Batman was concerned. I'm a Batman guy, so that was just, I'll never forget. We used to have friends and we would quote sequences out of it. We would all sit around and quote the different sequences of what he said. You know, this is the operating table and I'm the surgeon, he goes at one point. And we used to do those kinds of little sessions where we would repeat those kinds of things. So very, very reminiscent of those times. Really great. Really great.
Yeah, that comic is such a touchstone, I think, for everybody within a certain age window. I knew of it when I first started collecting comics. I mean, I started when I was a kid. I got out of it and just played baseball for a few years. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 10, the Batman movie came out in 89. And, you know, I was back in the comics full force. So I was kind of catching up. I think Dark Knight was 86. And that stuff was all out there. It was even kind of being referenced in the comics I'd get because I would just get the comics whenever I could. There'd be like those 3-packs at Walmart or maybe one of the convenience stores by me, I'd be lucky and they'd have some. And I just would get whatever I could get my hands on. And so I was really coming in. Obviously the Burton movie draws on Dark Knight Returns a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just kind of this thing that was a little bit out of reach for me. I didn't have access to go to it wasn't at the library. You could go to Walden Books at the mall if you were there and maybe read 10 pages before somebody tells you, hey, buy it or quit reading it, or your parents make you leave because they're done doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think I read most of it. One kid at school had the individual issues, and we'd sort of take turns reading them at lunchtime in like 10-minute blocks that we had. And it didn't matter what would say, hey, no, Ricky's reading 3. You've got to read 1. And maybe you end up reading 4 first. So even that story I read very piecemeal, but it was so just dark in a way that was, very, very novel at the time. Mm-hmm. And it just was fascinating to me. I was like, oh my God, this happened to this guy and this happened to that guy. And it blew me away. And somehow not even getting the whole thing at once captured my imagination in ways that I think if I just sat down and read it, I would have loved it. I'd still think about it all the time, but I wouldn't have just been like, oh, I wonder what led up to this. I mean, it really just did number on me. Mm-hmm. So that book always has just a special place in my comics, my influences, and wanted to try and do something with this story that brings in the visuals of that And I think sets up a pretty cool, the main idea was just to set up that there are other Captain Lancets in the multiverse out there. But the, you know, the beyond that, it was just a really fun thing to do. And I hope it's fun to read as well.
Yeah, that's great. But I have to tell you my Dark Knight Returns story. I bought the first one. The first one came out on schedule. And I sat down and I read it. And I was like, wow. And then the next issue, the issue two, came out on schedule. And I remember sitting down and pulling it out and reading it and going, oh, wow. And then there was this six-month period before we got issue number three.
Yeah, I've read about that a lot. That was that was probably the most infamous delay. Well, I'm going to say maybe aside from All-Star Batman, Robin. Yeah. But I certainly read a lot of stuff about that particular delay.
Yeah.
Both saying, see, it wasn't that bad. Everybody still loves it. And then other people, you know, people that own shops or stuff like that, or people just that were upset they had to wait. It's like, no, that was horrible. Can you think about how much better it would have been had they just gotten on it and done it? And it seems just so ridiculous to me because I wasn't really even reading comics then. I guess I'd be six or seven at that point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was all in the past as far as I was concerned, my vantage point. Mm-hmm. But it clearly was a monumental delay in terms of, because did Watchmen have delay? I think the last two issues, sometime so, around there, like had a delay. Because they're mentioned in the same breath, obviously, being big stories at the same time.
Well, let me tell you, the as long as that was 6 months until issue three. The fourth issue was a year. And
oh, is that right?
Yeah. Wow. And I literally wondered if I was going to be able to ever read the conclusion of it. So when it came out, I remember going home. I remember pulling it out and just like pouring over it, going like, oh my gosh, that happened and that happened and this kind of stuff. I love that. But I remember just sitting there going like, oh my goodness, I'm never going to get to read the end of this story. So we're not used to delays at that in that period of time. So that just got to me. So anyway.
But yeah, that's a long, I would have, especially not knowing, you think like, is this the month? No, it's not the month. Yeah. And I even remember, you know, there are times, actually Game of Thrones, when that was really fun to watch, my wife and I would go to, there was a bar about a mile from us we'd walk to and they'd show it. We didn't have HBO mm-hmm. At the time. And in fact, I don't think HBO even streamed at that time, which seems crazy to look back on. But I remember, you know, it was just such a blast. It was like a sporting event to go and watch this with people. And I remember one season ending and knowing it was going to be like a year and a half. And I thought, I just do not know how I'm going to wait a year and a half to do this again. Like, that's just unimaginable.
Yep.
So
yep. That's what the Dark Knight Returns was like for many of us. It was a tough experience. Okay. The next one is called The Last Spearfire, and it's a different art style altogether. Again, it's kind of like, it's got like tan paper. It's like some paper, and there's some issues that come out with people who are trying to evoke this period who have the paper kind of a light brownish kind of a thing. But then there's different colorings through it. Really great the way that's done. It gives you a feel like we're reading an old, like a 1940s air pilot kind of story. It really is great.
Well, thanks. So it was kind of intended to be that kind of thing. The story was initially done a few years ago for a anthology called Big Hype that a writer named Doug Wood put together with a bunch of people. And it was manga inspired. It was done manga size. And but the stories didn't necessarily need to be, you know, manga style or anything like that. And that was my story. I just had an idea. I was watching a documentary one night about the development of the Spitfire during World War II and leading up to World War II. And it just sparked something in my head that I thought, oh, that had this idea, both for the visual of the ship and the story behind it, and thought, oh, that's perfect for this. Jotted it down, went back to bed, and then got up the next day and kind of developed that story. And I was really happy with it. Didn't really have any plans to revisit it, but what I really liked was the spaceship that the story centers around. It's called the Spearfire, obviously meant to evoke the Spitfire. And it's essentially a combination of the, you know, the British Spitfire from World War II and a Flash Gordon rocket, which I thought would be a fun visual. And I think it did turn out to be a pretty fun mashup there. So I did always have in my head that I would love to use that ship in some way. And when I realized I was going to make this next Scarlet Twilight kind of a multiversal crisis type thing, I thought, okay, I've got an idea how we can get that in there. So I'm reprinting that story. And it's just a black and white story. In fact, all the pages have that newsprint overlay on them just to kind of mute the colors a little bit. I didn't want to go like really distress the pages like you see in some people's books that are meant to look retro, but I wanted to just mute everything a little bit so you have a sense of I didn't want to make it look too intentional, but I wanted to match the palette you see when you read those old comics, which are, you know, yellowed with age and everything. It gives the colors a nice even quality, and it really, the colors were so bright and so vivid because they were printing on newsprint new to that was going to get muted right then off the bat. And then age has done that as well. So I kind of wanted something that was in between new and our experience of Golden Age comics. And what you see on the black and white pages there is just the newsprint that overlay that we have in all the pages applied to that black and white story. So it's a black and white 10 pager. It sets up what this character and his spaceship and just what happens to them. I think it's a fun story and ends in kind of an open note, which we actually resolve in the next story in there, which is called, Flight of the Star Nomad.
Right, right. That was the next one. Is that your creation or is that a character that was from the past?
I shouldn't say. It's an adaptation.
Okay.
So the rule with those characters is there's no hard and fast rule, obviously. There's different opinions. What I did with characters that I may or may not be using that may or may not have been in other comics is just try and use the safest way of doing it. What really happens there is the big no-nos, and I'm using characters I've seen used a bunch of times by different people throughout decades, so I'm not too worried about it. But in doing a little research and talking to some people, the big no-nos are don't use the same name and don't put them on the cover. So I'm not doing those things. I mean, that is all, of course, if this is a character that's appeared in comics in the 1940s, which I'll just say, if you are familiar with those old characters, you might recognize a few people as we get going here. So that character is something like what I've been talking about. And he comes across the character in the previous story. He's kind of hopping from multiverse, from world to world, and encounters the character from the story we just wrapped up, and we see what happened to that guy in his world, and also what happens to my spaceship that I really like, the Spearfire.
Yeah, we get to see it switches over to color, and Captain Lance is there, and then I don't want to spoil, but let's just say somebody that we should recognize ends up at the end of that story. So,
do you recognize that guy?
I don't.
Okay, I was going to say that's if you. If you're into Golden Age comics and you've read a lot of them, you'll probably recognize him. He's been used by a few other comics in the last 10, 15, 20 years. I've seen him used a few times. So hopefully the people that are really into that stuff will recognize him. But essentially, and I think that reveals the sort of through line of these stories, is a lot of these stories are set up for the main story. And I'd say more than half of them are establishing that character that you see on the end of the preview there, his story, because he's the person that runs into the character in the last Spearfire, and then we see him end up eventually on Captain Lancet's Earth, and that really kicks off our story.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, of course, is the countdown to Cobalt Crisis returning to Scarlet Twilight, where you kind of fill in some of the stuff that's going on. There's also some art pages of the different versions of the characters and their costumes and stuff like that, which is lots of fun to see. And then there's an ad, help keep him running. United we win. Your country needs you, which is, that's got to be an allusion to an ad from like the 1940s and stuff. I was just the other day looking through Batman, and there was like a World's Finest, and they were showing covers, and they were showing them kind of support the war effort kind of stuff on the covers and things. And this is kind of along that lines, looks like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't look at those old comics without seeing Back the Fifth War Bond, you know, recycle all your metal, grow a garden so they could send more. I mean, it just permeated everything, as you know, I suppose it ought to have. And I really wanted that, you know, some of those references, I always just wanted to put those in there wherever I could. That character and that you're the page you're referencing is one of the sort of existing characters that I've seen used a lot of other places, and I kind of want to use him in my story as well. So it was just a fun sketch, really, of a you know, sort of a propaganda style poster that you kind of ended up seeing back in comics of that era, and that was just kind of a fun throwaway piece. But I have some fun things planned for that character. He's for those of you listening, is a speedster character with a red costume. He's of course not the Flash, but he's a character called Red Roadster, which is my version of an old character that's fallen into the public domain called Silver Streak. If you've seen Alex Ross's and Jim Kruger's Power Project Superpowers of Dynamite, I think they used him. I've seen a bunch. I've seen him in the pages of Savage Dragon. So I've seen a few different takes on him. And he has a really fun role, I think, in the overall story to play as well. But again, it's one of those characters I just wanted to just start setting up a little bit in this book. The book we're describing, by the way, is the is a campaign I ran last year called Countdown to Cobalt Crisis, and was just kind of a lead-in story. So the campaign that we have the pre-launch for now is the main story, is Cobalt Crisis issues 1 and 2, and we'll pay off a lot of the things that are in the story Wayne and I are discussing right now. So hopefully people won't have to wait too long to get the answers and resolutions of a few of these questions we're bringing up in the Countdown book that we're discussing.
Right, right. And the again, we're trying to gather some more followers for We Are Scarlet Twilight Cobalt Crisis Part 1, which if you go to Kickstarter, you will find out there. Now, of course, we're recording this a little early, and at this time, and I'm sure it's going to go up by the time that this posts, you have 129 followers, and that's already a good number, I have to say, as somebody who has helped people with Kickstarters and tried to get people to sign up for this kind of thing. That's already a great number. I bet you'll be, by the time this posts, you'll be over 200 or more by the time this happens.
Well, here's hoping. I'm doing everything I can to just get the word out. A little, I guess, behind the scenes stuff about Kickstarters is the Kickstarter for Countdown. I think I ran from mid-November to roughly mid-November to mid-December. Did really well. I was really blown away, actually, by how well it did, and really happy. The background there was I had intended to do it a lot earlier, but I had run a campaign on Zoop that for some printing issues just took forever to fulfill. Unfortunately, it was a really frustrating process. And I really like the guys at Zoop. I don't think it was, you know, their fault or anything like that. But it just some things were out of my control, and the delay was really bad. So I had set pre-launches for an August campaign, my other book, and this up for a long time. And then they basically just sat in pre-launch forever because I didn't feel comfortable launching a new campaign on Kickstarter before my Zoop campaign had fulfilled. So that one, the reason it just sat there, and it collected a lot of pre-launch followers, which was great. And I think that was a big key to the success of Countdown to Cobalt Crisis. So it made me really say to myself, okay, we've got to make sure we do a great job getting people on the pre-launch page and really build that up. I think we had 158 followers before we launched Countdown. And I hope to at least equal that with this. It really highlighted, and it's something I don't think I would have learned except by accident because we had the delay on August. How important it is to have people on that following on pre-launch so that when this launches, it's strong. And I think that just builds momentum and helps other people find the book as well.
Well, like I said, I've already signed up for it, so I'm anxious to see it. Now, of course, it says part one, which means that there's going to be a part two coming down the pike. What can you tell us about part one? Do you know how many pages are going to be in the book? Do you know when you're planning to have this become available? Any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so it's going to be available. We're going to launch the campaign. I say we're. I feel like I'm talking about myself in the third person. I guess it's just me. Launching in late February, early March, depending on when I can get the Countdown issues in my hands and out to backers. I want to make sure that's done or substantially advanced before we launch the new campaign. But you'll be able to read issue 1 when we launch this. If you message me, I wish I could do it automatically, but if you message me after backing, you'll get issue 1 digital, at least that day. You can read it and follow along with the campaign. So this campaign that we're going to launch, that's in pre-launch now is going to be issues 1 and 2. The entire series is going to be 8 issues, which really came from wanting something that was long and substantial like Crisis on Infinite Earths and Secret Wars are, but maybe avoided a little bit of the bloat. I think Crisis ends like 3 times. They take out the Animator, but he reforms. Like, oh God, we got to take care of this guy again. Oh, we do it again. This time he killed Supergirl. All right, let's really get him this time. And I think they went back 4 times after that. And then Earth One Superman punched him, and that seemed to do the trick, at least for that series. So I wanted to avoid things like that, really make the story streamlined in a fun way and keep the momentum where I wanted it to be. And I think that's an advantage of doing this myself. I can do this type of big epic story, but I'm also not beholden to, fixing continuity things, which is a lot of what these stories address sometimes is they're supposed to be big fun epics, but they're also like, hey, clean up Hawkman's continuity because it's a freaking mess and nobody understands it. I can just do the fun parts. I can just do the parts that, support the pacing, that feel like a movie, that have the right momentum to them. So the campaign itself will be for issues 1 and 2, and you can just get 1 if you want, but I hope you'll get both. And that's essentially driven by we're going to do 4 campaigns for this book, which be issues 1 and 2, 3 and 4, so on and so forth. It's really comes from the idea that I want to, ideally I would just do a campaign for all 8 issues and ship all 8 out at once and let people follow along digitally. So they're getting stuff all the time from me, but they're also just paying for 1 shipping event. Cause that's something from the first Scarlet Twilight, doing 1 issue at a time. I was like, oh my God, people have spent probably more on shipping than they have on what they cost to print these books. And I think I just thought that was ridiculous. So, wanted to make it so that there was issues, maybe 2 issues at a time seemed like a good compromise. I think doing 1 through 4 is a big ask. That would be a pricey, tier for just the main issues. But I also wanted it to be like something where you wouldn't be paying at least shipping every single issue by itself. So you'll have an opportunity to get the countdown issue that we're talking about now as an add-on. You can get issue 1 by itself if you want, but mainly the big thing I hope people will do is get issues 1 and 2 and see how that goes. Cause it's going to be a really fun story. I think is something that when I really looked at what I would do with this character after the first one, I didn't really have any concrete plans. I left it open in very specific ways. I sort of knew the plot of what would happen, but I didn't really have a creative reason. And I don't mean creative in a way that it's fun for me or not fun for me, but creative for a reader to be like, this is a good continuation of the story, but I can also see why this needed to be done rather than just to do another one. Creatively, there had to be something combined there that people hadn't seen before, and doing a Crisis Secret Wars type thing, I thought was that draw that made it to me like, yeah, that would be something that even if I'd read the first one, this is the same, but with other stuff in it, that I think is going to be a really fun mix. So the whole 8-part epic is going to be, I think, really cool. But this campaign is the start of it. It's issues 1 and 2. And like I said before, what I want to do with this campaign is make sure that you can back, when you go to the comic shop on Wednesdays, if you're really excited to read a book, and I've done this before myself, you're sitting, you're paying for your issues, you're going out to your car, and I'm going to read that issue that I'm pumped about, like right there before I drive home. And that's something that Kickstarter doesn't always have, is you can't just back and like get something right away. So what I offered with Countdown, and I'm going to offer with the rest of my campaigns when possible, is I'm going to have issue 1 finished or at least readable. So if you message me and say, hey, I just backed this tier, I'll send you issue 1 as soon as I get that message and can respond to you. And hopefully that'll be same day. It certainly was every time during Countdown, someone reached out and said, hey, could I read this now? I would certainly set it up automatically if I could, that you back, you get the digital right away. But I wanted some of that instant gratification to be a part of it, because I, on Kickstarter, we're really lucky the backers will support us. And I'm always looking for ways to make that more fun for them, to give it a little more value. And that's one way of doing it. I'm also going to really, with this one, because issue 2 will be in progress as the campaign's running and, before we fulfill. I've heard people that write stories and edit stories talk about how great it is to get new pages every week in the inbox from their artists. So if you back the campaign, I'll be treating the updates almost like people treat their Patreons, where you're just getting artwork, you're getting sketches, you're getting whatever is on my drawing board that week for the series. be that in progress stuff or, you know, just stuff I is kind of ancillary to it, but is about the story. I want to make sure people are getting that updates all the time. So you at least have some fun things, I think, to look forward to when you get that email. Oh, cool. There'll be some more pages, and I'll sort of separate them out from spoiler and non-spoiler stuff. So you can read like the layout stage if you want, see where the story is going and let me know what you think about it. Or you could just say, all right, I just want to see the sketches or the selection of panels that are non-spoiler. And then wait for the actual context of it when the actual issue is done. So that's something I'm trying to do to really just make this fun for people to back. I want you to be able to get something maybe you can't get from your comic book shop. There's a lot of things we can't offer. We can't compete with price. We can't compete with having Batman or characters like that that people are really familiar with and been following along with for years. But I can be a lot more accessible. I can let you in on a lot more of the development of the story and build things in that way. So I try to look at things that we can't compete with the comic shop on and maybe throw in some things that they can't do. Because I just want to make this worth it to everybody that's backing.
Well, it's going to be great, I'm sure. But you reminded me of a story I have to tell you. I was big into The Walking Dead for a while before it all came to a conclusion. And there was one issue that I was desperate to find out what was going to happen. I picked up, I bought my stuff. I had to be somewhere almost right away. And so what I did was I was driving and I had the issue on my steering wheel as I'm driving along.
And this does not sound safe, Wayne.
Yeah, so my friend of mine said, you're going to be the basis of a new book called Driving Dead. This is beginning to, because of that. So it made me laugh about that because I was so desperate to find out what happened. And I had to be somewhere and I couldn't be late. So I was really just nervous. So, but yeah, your stories always grip me and I always really get that great marriage of art and story and script. Just always to me just works so sparklingly well. And I'm sick that I missed that other one. I appreciate you making them, which leads me to ask, do you have like an email list or any kind of a thing that you keep people up to date? Even though I follow you on social media, somehow I missed that. Is there a list that you have that people can sign up for?
Yeah, I'm trying to set that up. So I asked, I think legally you can add people's emails from your backer list. You have to give them the ability to opt out. But you could technically just take all those and make them an email list. The backers, the original Scarlet Twilight, but that seems a little underhanded and I didn't want to do it. But for this most recent campaign, I did put in a survey, hey, if you don't want to be on my mailing list, let me know. And I just won't put you there, but I want to kind of just use that as the basis to start building a mailing list. And I've talked to a lot of other creators. I'm on the Discord with some other indie comics creators, and most people swear by the mailing list. So I think that's really important, especially as platforms, not to get political or anything with it, but just from the creative, the person using these social networks to promote your indie comics, the way things change, the things they prioritize, that get a lot of hits or attention one day, don't the next day. Mm-hmm. And that's the enemy of somebody really trying to get eyes on their work and promote their creation. So I definitely have started to see I'd never really gotten around to making a mailing list before, but I'm a little sold now hearing from other creators how well it's worked for them. And then also seeing like, hey, it could be that Twitter just like completely deprioritized things with links one day, and then where would we be? So definitely I'm going to get that rolling, starting with this campaign and moving forward.
Cause I try to stay out of politics, stuff like that. So I am signed up for every one of these things that I can figure out. I mean, I could list, there's about 8 or 10 of them that when a podcast episode comes out, I put it out there cause I want people to find out about it. But, speaking of which are the social media places, which obviously I missed, but which ones are the ones that we should be paying attention to and follow you on to keep up with your stuff?
I usually start out on Twitter just because most comic book stuff seems to be happening there. And you can find me at Benjamin W. Morse, all one word, on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram, I think on Benjamin Morse Art, and then Facebook. It's just under Benjamin Morse. If you search for me, I don't think they go by like exact username there. Facebook, I'm getting a lot more response from lately. I've seen a lot more comics activity happening, especially from the group. So I'm posting more stuff there. But it's basically that, Twitter. I always try and make sure I post something on Instagram, make sure I post to my YouTube page, which you can find me at Benjamin Morse Comic Book Artist. So I post a lot of community posts there. Usually when I have something to post, a new cover, just a piece of artwork that's not spoilery that I can put out, I essentially just try to make a post and put it out. Kind of, you know, I fine tune it. So like you can have links on some platforms and not on others, but I just try and put it out on all the main ones, Instagram, I throw it on Blue Sky, throw it on a YouTube community post, Twitter, Facebook, the whole schmear.
Because I'm glad you mentioned Blue Sky, because not to be funny, but there was this exodus from X that a whole bunch of comics creators went over to Blue Sky. And I was already there. I had gotten an invite, or you had to get a thing to join.
Yeah.
And so I had joined it, and all of a sudden I got all these like tons of people want to friend me and stuff like that. And then a lot of these people had no posts and no nothing. And I was kind of like, okay, but it turns out there are a lot of comic creators that are on Blue Sky now. So that's something to pay attention
to. Yeah. And that's, I only said the thing about, I know a lot of people's reasons for going here, they are political, and that's not necessarily my, that's nobody's business, or, none of my business why they do it. But my comment about the social media was just the changes people like for instance, is when I first started doing Kickstarters, people were telling me, oh, Facebook ads are the way to go. That'll get you so many backers. You get $10 for every one you spend. And then one day that just stopped being effective. Sometime after, I know Elon's controversial, but sometime after he took over Twitter, links were like hugely deprioritized. So if you had a link to somewhere else that you were trying to get attention for, you had to be really clever about how you did that. Mm-hmm. And those are the types of things that I look at. It's like, okay, you have to stay on top of that, but we all have other things to do. It's impossible to stay on top of 10 social networks and keep track of what they're prioritizing and not prioritizing in terms of attention. So that's all I was really getting at with the newsletter thing, is that's something at least you can control and not be at the mercy of whatever tech person decides is best for their, in all fairness. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can certainly understand why these places want their traffic to stay on their site. That's a fair concern, but it's not necessarily in line with what we as indie comics creators need, which is to get you here and take you over to Kickstarter, essentially.
Because I was one of the places that I haven't been on very much is Reddit. And almost every other social media thing I use, I can copy and paste the link. But Reddit doesn't want you to do that. And I didn't know that. And so I got banished from a couple of groups over there. And I had to write them and say, well, what did I do wrong? And they said, well, we don't want you to copy and paste links. We want you to write something and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, I said, I'll have to go back and figure that out. Because like I said, I literally go blunk, 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 blunk from one to the other, copying and pasting the links, because I want to get it out to as many people as I can. And Reddit was a whole nother animal. And so I have to sit down and figure that one out when I get a few minutes. But I don't want to waste everybody's time and talk about the ones I'm on, but it sounds like though I'm on the ones that you're on, but I'm also on other ones as well. I'm always trying to find more people to listen to the podcast. And so I'm forever looking for new stuff like that. So I just have to encourage people, if you see Ben's name anywhere, be sure to sign up and follow him, because he does such great, wonderful stuff and great storytelling. And as somebody who is a comic fan myself, when I look at your stuff, I see that you are a comic fan as well. And that always makes me feel good. I was like,
absolutely. Thank you. That's just, everybody's in this for the love of the game, really. Whether you're readers or doing stuff like you're doing, Wayne, or just creating your own comics, obviously. So, I really love the history of comics. When I would get books about, one of my main entry points to comics was not necessarily comics themselves. It was the books in the library that you could find that were about comics. So, I always had a really good grasp of comics history, not a great grasp, but I always would look at pages from those old comics, be like, oh, that's cool. That's what they were doing back then. And you'd see the evolution. That was really part of my readership experience, I guess, as a kid getting into this art form. So I always loved those old Golden Age comics. I loved the vibe of them. Everyone loves the Art Deco cars and the backgrounds and things like that, the costumes. There's a visual appeal that I think everybody you know, universally thinks is cool to different degrees. But there's something about those old comics additionally that has the pacing of them, that, you know, this is all times when they were figuring out the art form, so not everything worked, but they were throwing things to a wall and seeing what stuck, and there was a lot that stuck. And furthermore, a lot of that stuff we had, we don't use anymore. So I thought, you know, there's a lot of good tools here that we, for whatever reason, have stopped using. And it would be great to make a comic that that uses them. And I hopefully weave them into the story in a good way that's fun to read as well.
Well, I have to tell you a quick story. I had a friend of mine who was into comics and bought everything in the world. He happened to get a copy of a 1940s Batman comic. And he knew I was a big Batman fan, so he brought it over to me. We were at a convention where I was working behind the counter. Not much was going on. He brought the book over to me, and I was horrified to touch it. You know, it's a 1940s book, and I don't want to get any sort of anything on it because I don't want to diminish its value. But what I did was I would turn the page, you know, very carefully grab a corner and turn the page. The thing that interested me about it was in that Batman book, there were four stories. Now, you know, nowadays we get like one whole story that goes on for issue after issue. This one had four individual stories that they lasted about 5-10 pages. And man, I sat there going like, wow, can you imagine this? If we did this kind of stuff today, that would be kind of great. But, you know, the interesting thing was it had a beginning, a middle, and an end to each one. And I was like, wow, I said, I kind of wish comics were still like that. That was so much fun to read.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I really wanted to do with Countdown, the issue that's fulfilling now. It was kind of the lead-in to the one we're going to be launching in early this year. Is when I did the first Scarlet Twilight, I wanted to take some of those elements, but in my research, there were so many things I thought, God, it would be cool to just do one of these comics, not necessarily take elements of it to weave into a different thing, which is what Weird Scarlet Twilight was. So this was able to stay way closer to that being the unique sort of book that it was. And that was a lot of fun because I could do the prose stories. I could do what you're describing where there's a bunch of stories. But then my twist on it was when you get to the end, you kind of realize that, oh, wait, three or four of these stories were actually one story, or they had the same character, and you find out they were related in a way that it resolves itself on the last story page of that issue. So that was kind of my... And that's my approach to a lot of things. I want to take stuff that I see there and say, okay, this is a lot of fun. I want to recreate everything I see here, but I also want to do some other stuff that now looking back at this, you know, 50, 60, 70 years later, there are things that readers are used to that I can kind of pepper in my own way that will just be a nice little surprise. And hopefully it accomplishes that.
Yeah, that book is a wonderful book. Just terrific stuff. And once again, it's We Are Scarlet Twilight, Cobalt Crisis Part 1. And be sure to sign up for it. As I said, it's got 129 followers as we're recording this. I'm sure it'll be much more by the time this posts. But be sure to get in there and back it and support it so you can keep up to what's going on and help support Ben as he's doing these good things and making these great stories happen. So what I heard you say was you're in the middle of issue 2 right now that you're working on?
No, I'm middle of issue 1. I think I've got, I want to say 6 pages to go. I had to kind of stop to do couple other stories and the covers for issue 1. So I'll kind of be back in the main production. I have basically everything is in grayscale for the pages I've done. So it's not colored, but it's shaded. You know, the inks are done and it's shaded. So it's certainly readable. And I think I need to get 6 more pages done and then it'll be to the point where I'd at least, and I think a fun thing might be to do is maybe just have a grayscale version that's ready to go when the campaign launches. And if you want to read that, you can read it and I'll just send an updated version out to people as I get pages colored. Wow. Cause I really want people to follow along with this, you know, like have some sense of being in there, kind of being over my shoulder as I create it. And, so there'd definitely be something you can get on day one of the campaign that is like the whole issue. And that should hopefully be a fun thing to do. Actually, that might be kind of cool to just do the black and white version while the campaign's going. And then as the campaign ends, you get the color version. And then a few months later, as issue 2 is done, you get that before we go into the next campaign for 3 and 4.
I think they call that a noir version of the when it's black and white.
Yeah. It's black and white with the shading. Cause like the way I do it is cause I'm coloring this as well as penciling and inking it. There are some things that I've learned really look good in color. Some things that it's really good if you do the rendering with the pen and ink. And I found that sometimes I would almost need to color the whole page as I was drawing it, which was not ideal from a momentum perspective. You really get into the flow when you're inking and drawing in a nice way and lets you go fast. And then if you stop to color it too much, you get a little held up. So my compromise here on this, which I really hadn't done before, was I'm not going to get too hung up in the colors, but I'm going to do grayscale shading. So at least I have a sense of the color fields and the highlights and I can do that and say, okay, actually I need some more detail here. I'll draw that detail with ink or no, this looks cool. That's enough. The color looks better. I don't want to muddy it up with a bunch of lines. So it really lets me, in the same way I was describing, because I'm writing and lettering and doing all this myself, I can go back and fix things on the fly. Even in the art process, I can kind of say, do an ink pass with minimal detail, say, okay, here, and here, I need more ink detail. Here, and here, I need more color detail. And just decide what area looks coolest done this way. So that's kind of what I'm doing in this issue. And it's worked out really well speed-wise. And I'm very happy with the results, you know, visually as well. It just lets me really just be composing the whole page at once in a way that is a lot of fun to do.
Very cool. Well, it sounds terrific. I just can't wait to see it. I got to tell you one quick story about noir issues. I was a couple of years back, Warner Brothers decided they wanted to have DC Comics characters cross over with their cartoon people. And Tom King did a book where he crossed over Batman and Elmer Fudd.
Oh yeah, Lee Weeks drew that. It's fantastic. Yeah,
it was terrific. What the artist? What they did this year for Batman Day, which is like in September, they released a noir version of that comic. It was all black and white.
Oh, and so I'd love to see that. I'm hard a huge to get. Lee Weeks fan.
I begged.
I didn't even hear of it.
Yeah, I begged people. I begged my store. Please make sure you save one of those for me. It's great fun to sit and read, you know. It was Tom King. I got a chance to interview him when the book just came out. I said, "You have to realize you made, you know, Elmer Fudd cool and popular."
Yeah, he really did, didn't he? He gave Elmer Fudd a lot of backbone and dignity that I would not have not have ascribed to him. But it was a fun take on it. I've never looked at him the same since. But it didn't. Like really interfere, like the way he did Bugs Bunny. I was like, yeah, I just wish he were cooler, you know.
Yeah.
I had something there. I was not that, you know. It's a one off. It's a fun story. It's just an idea. It's not something that really matters in a huge way. Mm-hmm. But it was a fun take on those characters. But yeah, Elmer Fudd was really cool.
Well, they did a noir version of that. That's what made me think of it. Was the fact that that came out for Batman Day this September. So it's just noir versions are hip these days. So if you want to do it,
I can't get enough of those.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's great stuff. Again, it's We Are Scarlet Twilight, Cobalt Crisis Part 1. Be sure to sign up and be a follower so that you get notified when the campaign starts, which isn't far away when this posts. So be sure to keep up with it. And we'll have to follow you on social media. I'll have to do a better job myself so I keep up with the stuff you're doing. I'm just sick that I missed that when I was out on Kickstarter. I would love to support that. But
well, you'll be able to catch up on this one. Well, you'll be able to catch up now, but as far as printed copies go, we'll definitely make add-ons available for the countdown issue.
Be great.
Oh, and one thing I should say, for all my comics, if you go to Linktree August comic, all one word, August like the month, comic like the comic book, that's got all my stuff in there. They have the current campaign on the top, have places you can get digital or physical copies of my other books from Red 5 or Global Comics. You can get Facebook pages of my stuff, my social media links. So that's the place to go to just keep up on everything. If you're, those of you listening, that's the place to go where you won't miss anything. It'll all be current in what's out there at the moment.
Highly recommended. So be sure to do that.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy. And I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support.
For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.